on? Put your beanie, put your emotional support beanie on. The one that your mom knitted you was really great.
I know, but it's too hot.
It looks very efficient. Like, it's really nice.
It's a nice beanie.
And well made.
I'm so glad we're recording this.
Oh.
Hello, and welcome to The Dirt, a podcast about archaeology, anthropology, and our shared human past. I'm Anna.
And I'm Amber, and you are listening to what we are recording as the last episode of 2023. Or at least I hope it is. Not because I don't love our show, but because I don't want any more 2023.
Yeah. A lot of good's happened this year, but it has been a challenge for us, together and separately. And boy, that's enough. That's enough, 2023. But I want to focus on the positive because so many wonderful things have happened for which we are so grateful.
Yeah. And sometimes the challenges, the bad things, and the good things can be tied up in each other. And that leaves us unsure of how to categorize experiences or parts of ourselves. 2023 is like that for me, definitely. And you know what else was, Anna?
Uncertain noises.
Well, also you have a sense because we did talked about this when
we pre-gamed.
We were at Five Guys and we became Seven Guys, and
the Five Guys are now inside me. And I'm Six Guys.
but what else was very like complex and lots of bad and good things tied up in each other was my years of studying Near Eastern archaeology. They featured challenges like being terrible at Akkadian, hearing lots of implicitly and explicitly racist ideas tossed around, and acute mental illness. But they also included really good things like meeting incredible people, being nudged towards finding my calling, and learning about the Hittites.
There we are.
Hittites. I hope you were wearing comfortable shoes, Anna, because that was a bit of a walk to get to my point. But here we are. We are talking about the Hittites today.
Ah, yes. The Hittites. Sure excited to learn about those guys. Okay, so
you think Five Guys is a lot. I got hundreds of thousands of guys here.
How are their burgers? Do they do pickles? The term Hittite is used variously to describe a political state, a cultural or ethnic group, a group of people, and a language. We're going to talk about all three today, but let's start by setting the stage. Everybody get out your atlases and point to Anatolia. Excellent. It's the westernmost part of Asia, with the Mediterranean at its south, the Black Sea at its north, Aegean Sea to the west, and the Armenian Highlands to the east. It's been a pretty happening place to be for a long, 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 long time, as we learned in our Göbekli Tepe episode. So, here in the heart of Anatolia was the land of Hatti, home of the Hattians. We don't know whether they referred to themselves or the language they spoke as Hattian, but we do know that the people who moved in towards the end of the 3rd millennium BCE from the Pontic Caspian Steppe, which is a chunk of Eastern Europe / Central Asia,
This is a difficult sentence.
People, yeah.
That moved in and spoke.
Ah, okay. So those people that moved in spoke an Indo-European language, and they did not call themselves or their language Hittite. They called it Neshili, language of Nesha, with Nesha being the same as Kanesh. You might remember that place, and good for you if you do, because I don't.
As Kanesh.
Kanesh. You can say it.
No, I'd say, like, so this is.
Okay.
Kanesh.
It has. I'm sure I learned it. It has dribbled out my ears by now.
I think you're going to jog your own memory here when you read the next line.
Well, you might remember that place as the old Assyrian trading outpost, or Karum, that was the site of lots of family drama back in our episode on frauds and pretenders.
Do you remember that?
The brother and the sister.
The sister being like, don't you dare rip me off.
Yeah.
Like, don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was.
I didn't remember the place. It happened.
That was
in,
Kanesh.
So perhaps they were Neshites or Neshians, but as they gained political strength in their new ish, like over the course of some centuries, their new home, they did not change the name of the state or its capital as they expanded. In fact, kind of the opposite. in the mid late 17th century BCE.
So when I wrote this script, there's a lot of like mid, late, mid, those sorts of things, because Bronze Age archaeology, they're sort of like, there's middle and low chronology, and there's argument about like specific absolute dates for a lot of things based. And so like I'm erring in the side of don't use this as the basis of like your honors thesis, but trying to give folks like a general sense without kind of, because I don't want to give an exact date for these sorts of things without having a much larger conversation about how one would determine one date or the other. So that's you're going to hear a lot of, like, first half of this century. So this is just Bronze Age. We're big Bronze Age hours over here.
In the mid-late 17th century BCE, as I said, the first Hittite king for whom we have contemporary records, Labarna, moved the capital from Nesha to Hattusha and changed his own regnal name, his king name, to Hattushili, meaning man from Hattusha. From there, the kingdom based in the land of Hatti began a campaign of imperial expansion. Love to see that. Becoming one of the largest and most powerful in the Bronze Age. The emergence of a Hittite polity is generally characterized as a conquest of the indigenous Hattian population. But we see a persistence of them, the Hattians, through material culture and through their language. There are lots of Hattic loan words in Hittite, as well as other local languages, such as Luwian and neighboring Hurrian. Those are the horse guys. I know the Hurrians. They're always trying to get places in a hurry on their horses.
Yeah, and also Hurrian is a completely separate language that isn't in the same family as any of these languages.
And it's not spoken by horses, it's spoken by the people.
Correct.
Yes. It's thought that Hittite was a prestige language. Akkadian was the language of international business, and for most people, Hattic, or an Anatolian Indo-European language like Luwian, was what they spoke to each other and used in their day-to-day life. Archaeological evidence for the Hattusha-based empire wasn't found until the late 19th century CE, when reference to the land of Hatti led early archaeologists to connect them to the biblical Hittites, who appear throughout the Old Testament and of whom perhaps the most famous is Uriah, soldier in King David's army and husband of Bathsheba.
Do you remember what happened to him?
Yeah, nothing good.
Nothing good.
King David wanted to woo Bathsheba and so sent Uriah off to the front lines and he died.
And then he was like, hey.
Hey, girl.
The Hittites are included in several lists of guys who show up from different places. They're seen as good fighters, like Uriah. He's one of the strong men.
He was a general.
He was one of his like beefiest boys. So that's where Hittite comes from.
Right. So those Hittites in the Bibli and these Hittites in the archaeology may or may not have been the same, but either way, Hittite and Hittitology are used as a matter of convention in the discipline to describe them.
Yeah, so that's where that comes from. So in the 15th century BCE, mm-hmm, nearly mm-hmm. 300 years after Labarna rebranded as Hattushili, the old kingdom of the old Hittite kingdom gave way to the new Hittite kingdom and the development of a Hittite empire.
Now they leveled up.
So smash cut, Egypt. At the site of this... I was running out of time.
Stop at the table.
Sorry, I was running out of time. Smash cut, Egypt. At the site of Tel El Amarna, known in the 18th dynasty of Egypt as Akhetaten, the new capital and center of solar deity Aten worship established by Akhenaten, husband of Nefertiti, and possibly the most famous Egyptian pharaoh after Tutankhamun.
Certainly the one with the most bodacious hips.
Yeah.
As depicted in artwork of the time, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Not which, today.
So 35 years. So smash cut again to modernity. 35 years before Tutankhamun's tomb was opened in the Valley of Kings in Luxor, back in Amarna, Tel El Amarna, which was 250 miles away. So see, I'm situating this period, the Bronze Age.
Right.
So So Amarna popped off, ending with Tutankhamun moving everything back to Luxor.
And then, yeah.
And then
immediately
expiring. Back. Well, yes. No, it took him a few years. Few years. He had a good run of about 9 years.
Yeah.
So back in Amarna, Tel El Amarna, 250 miles away, a cache of 300 some tablets was uncovered by a woman digging for Sabach. And Sabach is a fertilizer product that is consists of decayed mud bricks. So like the temper, like the mm-hmm. chaff and stuff used to temper, that decays. So between that stuff having decayed and the mud that's in it, it's
phosphorus and stuff.
I think it's nitrogenous. And so it's good for fertilizer, but it's also good as like a heat source.
Yeah.
So you can burn it. Mm-hmm. So
like cow pies kind of, but made from rock.
I mean, basically
rocky cow pies.
It's actually not that much different of like if depending on what you feed your cows. And so she was doing her own form of excavation. This is common in places that have a lot of mud brick architecture under the ground.
Digging up a useful resource.
Yeah. So this was in 1887. So she found 300 some tablets. They were all in cuneiform. She didn't know this, but like it was.
I would imagine she realized like these are written on maybe, them. I cannot read it.
Maybe she also took a couple years of Akkadian and was not good at it. So what had been a lightly surveyed site being like, ruins, turned it into the brought it into the limelight of archaeological investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So those tablets that unnamed woman found became known as the Amarna letters, which represent represent a sample of diplomatic correspondence among the major players of Western Asia and the Mediterranean in the late Bronze Age. So I will have a link in the show notes. There are a lot of show notes this week. Have fun, everyone, including quite a few like primary sources.
300 some tablets of show notes.
Not that, as you'll learn in a few minutes. So you can read the Amarna letters translated into English. It's up on archive.org. And I had like a physical reaction when I saw the cover because I thought it was hideous then. And I think it's hideous now. but it's just it's very much like a, but you can read them all.
Sure.
So the letters date to a relatively short period of time in the mid 14th century BC. So it covers maybe 30 years. And so this was just like this was basically like a banker's box, like just like a filing cabinet drawer.
Yeah.
It was just select correspondence that just was filed away.
Are these the ones, I think we're probably going to get to this, but these are the ones that are like my brother, my dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll read one of these.
Okay, awesome.
So the senders include Egypt, obviously, because it was found there.
What?
So a lot of these, I think there may be like copies of things that were sent out, but most of them are addressed to the king of Egypt.
Can you imagine being a scribe and having someone be like, can you do this in triplicate?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can't. I know you can't, but like...
Cool. Yeah. So Egypt, Assyria, which as if you'll remember is northern Mesopotamia, Babylonia, which is southern Mesopotamia. This was while they were distinct before one conquered the other and then in reverse. The Mitanni, which is to the southeast of Hatti, northwest of Assyria. Yep. Arzawa, which is west of Hatti, which is coastal Anatolia facing the Aegean. Because remember, the land of Hatti is in the heart of Anatolia, and Anatolia is roughly Turkey today.
Do you think it's cold there, Hatti? I think it's ever a stone cold Hatti.
It's also Alashia, which is Crete mm-hmm. to us,
mm-hmm.
And then a variety of smaller city states on the eastern Mediterranean coast and Canaan. A lot of those. So a lot of those letters, like 40 some from one guy who's just like, Oh, no. And there are a handful of letters from Hittite kings. And there are many, many more from those minor polities asking for help resisting Hittite military encroachment.
Oh.
So the Hittites are both the subject and object of a lot of letters.
It's like just a bunch of siblings being like, Dad.
Actually, some of them are literal siblings because this is, there's a lot of like diplomacy happening here and like strategic marriages and stuff.
Yeah.
So now, Anna, we're going to do a little bit of cuneiform studies.
Oh boy.
So when you look something up in the cuneiform record, like if you find something that's referred to in an article, say about the Amarna letters, there will be a citation that includes an abbreviation that corresponds to a publication. That's how tablets are known. So, you know, I've said like a name, Enum Elish, like that's like the first words of a document.
Musical compositions are often recorded in the same way.
That's not how tablets are recorded.
Oh, okay.
So that may be how the text is described, but a tablet is known by its publication. So the Amarna letters were first published in 1915 as D. El Amarna Tafeln. So they're abbreviated to EA.
Oh, okay.
So it has to do with when they were first like studied and published. So I see on Wikipedia that the Hittite letters were in the low 40s. Don't hit the table, Anna. that they're in the low 40s of the EA sequence. So I head on over to the Cuneiform Digital Library Initiative, or CDLI, and search for EA41. What I get is what you see in front of us here. And so you see there, so EA41 is the 41st tablet published in the EA volume.
Okay.
And then that number after it is often a like an accession number. So like it's a different.
Sure.
It's a different way of. And so what you see on one side is the line art when somebody originally published it, because that this is how you publish a tablet. You
hard to fax.
You photograph it. Uh-huh. Now you photograph it and you do line art,
mm-hmm.
And then you transliterate it, or you show off and you just read it off the signs. But you see here on the entry on CDLI, and I have this linked in the show notes if you want to like kind of see how this works. You have the information about it's on clay. it's Middle Babylonian. That's the because it dates to 1400 to 1100 BCE.
Could you give me a sense of the size of these tablets?
Not big.
Okay.
So, like but a few
like,
inches.
Not like the little shredded wheat ones. Not like.
No, the little shredded wheat ones that you're thinking of are usually receipts.
Receipts. Okay.
So these are just like, these are handheld.
The size of a phone, kind of?
Depends on how, right. What size. But they're, it's like about the, it's a smaller than a Pop-Tart.
Okay. The universal measure of
it's a, sizes. It's like a.
Handheld.
It's handheld because it was handheld, like to scribe and to write. So you have these information where it lives now, like it lives mm-hmm. in the Cairo Museum. And then below you see the transliteration. So the transliteration, you see the language is Akkadian, cause these were in Akkadian, and then you can read it and you're like, ah, cool. Luma, Lugal, Gal. Yeah, cool. So you can go through and you read this. And then in a lot of cases, you will have you may have the translation, but you also have, if you click through, you find the other relevant publications and connected texts.
Oh, that's cool. It's like cross reference.
Yeah. So the CDLI is great. The CDLI is a really great initiative because these tablets live in museums. And it's hard to get to them. If you're learning any of these languages, the way you learn the language is by like reading the tablets that have been published. It is prohibitively expensive to do Assyriology because it involves you having to travel largely to Europe and to access these things if you want to do any original research.
Yeah.
So having CDLI makes it accessible to study.
That's
more
great.
And also it makes it accessible to for want of a better word, like descendant communities of Assyriology.
Yeah.
So big, big fan. So if you ever are like reading something and you see like a couple letters after and then a number, like that's what that means. That's what, and so you can citation, look it up. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So that is the letter. So this letter, EA41, was translated into English by William Moran in 1992, and it concerns itself with the state of Egyptian Hittite diplomatic relations. So Anna's going to read this now, and I put a phonetic spelling.
I thank you for doing that. Yeah. I also, something just clicked for me. I have a friend who
you have a friend who's Hittite?
I have a friend who brought a dog back from excavations in Anatolia, and his name is Shupi.
I think I know why.
Yeah. So
I think that means pure.
I mean, it's.
I think Shupi is in Hittite.
But it's the full name. He's named.
Oh, that's his full name?
Yeah, Shupi Luli-Umash. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, cute.
I'm sure. Okay. So, Shupi Luli-Umash, great king of Hatti.
Well, no, you missed the first part of his of
thus
addressing.
The sun?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thus the sun. Hey. Shupi Luli-Umash, great king of Hatti, say to. Gosh, that's small letters.
Let me make it fit.
I'm zooming. Huria, the king of Egypt, my brother. For me, all goes well. For you, may all go well. I hope this tablet finds you well. For your wives, your sons, your household, your troops, your chariots, and in your country, may all go very well. Neither my messengers, whom I sent to your father, nor the request that your father made, saying, let us establish only the most friendly relations between us, did I indeed refuse.
No, don't. You don't need to emphasize it. Because remember, this is like in the Bible. This is like in the Bible and like the King James Version. There will be things that are italicized. Uh-huh. That is where the word is inferred and is added for the benefit of the reader in translation.
Okay.
It isn't for emphasis.
I will not emphasize.
Yeah.
Let us establish only the most friendly relations between us. Did I indeed refuse? Whatsoever your father said to me, I indeed did absolutely everything. And my own request, indeed, that I made to your father, he never refused. He gave me absolutely everything. Why, my brother, have you held back the presents that your father made to me when he was alive? Now, my brother, you have ascended the throne of your father, and just as your father and I were desirous of peace between us, so now too should you and I be friendly with one another. The request that I express to your father, I shall express to my brother too, meaning you, bro. Let us be helpful to each other. I mean, I really want to emphasize that because it sounds like it should be. Let's be helpful to each other. My brother, do not hold anything. Nope. My brother, do not hold back anything that I asked of your father. As to the two statues of gold, one should be standing, one should be seated. And, my brother, send me the two silver statues of women and a large piece of lapis lazuli and a large stand for something.
For lacuna.
Dot, 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 dot. If my brother wants to give them, let my brother give them. But if my brother does not want to give them, when my chariots have been readied for dot, 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 linen...
Linen huzi. A huzi is a thing, we don't know what it is, but it's made out of linen.
Alrighty. I will return them to my brother. Whatever you want, my brother, write to me so I can send it to you. I herewith send you as your greeting gift one silver riton, which is a drinking cup.
Shaped like a stag.
Shaped like a stag. That's cool. Probably just the head, I guess. Oh, I don't know. 5 minas its weight. Oh, that's the word you played in Scrabble. Mm-hmm, yeah. 1 silver riton of a young ram, 3 minas its weight, 2 silver discs, 10 minas their weight.
And
2 large Nikiptu trees. What's a Nikiptu tree?
We don't know, but we know it's a tree because of the thing that it's like a thing made of wood.
Okay.
And it's a Nikiptu, so you're like, well, it's a tree, so yeah.
All
right. So this is so, you know, there is
my stuff.
Well, no, this is so what I've learned from like reading through a lot of like there also in the show notes, you'll find a lot of stuff around like Hittite language and Hittite letters and just sort of like the social, some of the social mores that come through. And that's, I'm trying to give glimpses into that. So I think what's happening here is the king, the Hittite king is saying to the Egyptian king, be like, your father and I had a great relationship. And, but it seems that you aren't as interested in having a great relationship as your father was. So, I asked for those things. So you can send them to me or not send them to me, but you got to let me know. And so something else of, you know, why have you held back the presents that your father made to me while he was alive?
Per my last tablet.
Well, no, like saying that, asking that question, the Hittites were very fond of rhetorical questions.
Oh.
So there's like, there is also like a bit of a tone here.
Okay.
Of like sort of, the Hittites seem to know their worth in this conversation. And so there was one that I read that was like, basically like, if we had a suitable candidate for marriage here, why would we be asking you? Like things like that, like a little
get
shady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So this letter was from, Shupi Luliuma the first, who ruled from around 1370 to 1330 BCE. So the Hittites and Egypt were two of the biggest imperial players of the day. And as such, they had an on again, off again diplomacy. When it was on, it was very on. They had strategic marriages, famous peace treaties that we'll get to in a second. But when it was off, it was so, so off. Perhaps the most off again moment between Egypt and the Hittites came at the Battle of Kadesh.
I know this one.
Yeah. So during the reign of Shupi Luli Uma's grandson, Muwatalli II. So Kadesh is located near the contemporary border of Lebanon and Syria, near the city of Homs.
Guess what? It's been a contested border for a long time.
No. It truly is just like.
Oh, really?
It's just near the border.
Oh, okay.
It's near the edge of Syria.
Okay.
This border less contested than many.
All right.
But it's near the city of Homs. And in the early 13th century BCE, this is where the Hittite and Egyptian imperial spheres collided. So this is also where this area is where a lot of the folks who were writing to the Egyptians being like, Hittites much? We're coming from. So Egypt's hold in the Eastern Mediterranean had been slipping for quite a while at this point, as the Hittites grew in strength and the Mitanni shaved away territory further into Asia. There were other folks at the table here, and they were dividing up the pie, and you know the slices got like skinnier and skinnier.
And then Ramses.
Enter Ramses II, who was a young king who decided to distinguish himself by resuming military expansion in hopes of recapturing lost territory and getting Egypt back on top. Because it's not just the territory that they're trying to claim, it's the access. It's cutting off access to the Mediterranean for points west. And also controlling what comes through. So it's not just like Canaan that they wanted. They wanted,
whole trade corridor.
It's a trade corridor. And also it would be like a way to block access and therefore kind of get a tighter grip on trade. So the battle is famously immortalized on the walls of Ramses II's mortuary temple, the Ramesseum, where a giant king is shown charging his chariot, bow drawn, as Hittite forces flee amid the many dead and drowned in the Orontes River. Mm-hmm. So military history nerds love the Battle of Kadesh because it's allegedly the best documented battle in all of ancient history, according to all of the reliefs and inscriptions that exist. So Egyptian sources speak of it as an effective routing of the Hittite menace, but the reality seems to have been a bit murkier.
Imagine.
So with the excavation of Hattusha, the Hittite capital, and increasing knowledge of Hittite language and material culture, the Ramesside narrative started to seem a bit one-sided. So the effects of the battle weren't quite so definitive. Egyptian campaigns into Canaanite lands stalled out, and tensions continued to simmer between them and the Hittites. So It's more commonly characterized as a draw now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember learning about it in undergrad lecture, and it was cited as an example of, like, the winner writes the history, but yeah, also the loser writes their own history and sometimes spins it politically.
Well, and so the winner writes its history and the loser writes its history, and we believe it because we're really into Egypt. And then
they haven't found the winners.
And there really isn't.
Well, we haven't found the other side of the story yet, and then we did.
And we did, but it wasn't. So what we didn't find, like, a no, we won, is we found evidence of a continuing slightly contemptuous relationship between the two of them. So 16 years later,
okay,
during the reign of Muwatalli II's brother, remember Muwatalli II is the son of Shubi-Lulayumish. So Muwatalli II was the one who was involved in mm-hmm. the Battle of Kadesh. Mm-hmm. So his brother, Hattusili III, remember what his name means?
Dude from Hattusha.
Yep. A peace treaty was signed between Egypt, still ruled by Ramesses II, and the Hittites. Ever. So, you know, signing a peace treaty 16 years later doesn't much to support your, like, and I killed everyone.
It was a
everyone.
Decisive
yeah.
victory that I decided to do a piece about.
It was decided, yeah. So in 1906...
Ramesses was still king.
Yeah, yeah. So in 1906, that peace treaty was found in the massive Hittite state archives.
I love an archive.
Like 10,000 tablets.
So many tablets.
It revealed that the Hittite version of, so they found the Hittite version of that treaty that read a little bit differently than what was in Egyptian.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So in the show notes, you will find a very cool document, a very cool article that is side by side. So there's the Hittite Babylonian text and then the Egyptian text. And so you'll see parts of it that just are absent but also are summed up a little bit differently. And some of them are like, okay, we don't need every name of the king, like those sorts of things. But now, Anna is going to read.
I'm gonna do my best.
We're going to read a chunk.
Yeah.
Of it.
So this is the Hittite text.
Yeah.
And so be it. I'm going to just say Ramesses.
Oh, I like.
Riamashesha Mayamana.
Yeah.
The great king of Egypt, with Hattusili, the great king of the land, Hatti, his brother, in order to give good peace, good brotherhood, and to obtain a mighty kingdom between them as long as we live and forever, a treaty has made. So these two guys made a treaty. Riamashesha Mayamana, the great king of Egypt, the strong in all lands, son of Minmuaria, the great king of Egypt, the strong, son of Minpahiritaria, the great king of Egypt, the strong, unto Hattusili, the great king of the land Hatti, the strong, the son of Mershili, the great king of the land of Hatti, the strong, son of Shubiluliuma. Is that the Umash, isn't it? And in
sometimes, and sometimes
alrighty.
It doesn't.
The great king of the land of Hatti, the strong, behold, now I give good brotherhood, good peace between us forever, in order to give good peace, good brotherhood, by means of a treaty of Egypt with Hatti forever. So it is.
Yeah. So that is pulled from that article comparing the Hittite and Egyptian versions side by side. So many words, which you can find that in the show notes and you can read the rest of it. If you'd like to see a very big copy of it, you can. At the United Nations headquarters.
Why is it there?
Because it was donated in 1970 by the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Turkey and is described on the UN website thus. Quote, the treaty pledges eternal friendship, lasting peace, territorial integrity, non-aggression, extradition, and mutual help. The pledges in this treaty are similar to the United Nations ideals, end
okay.
quote. Which, like, okay. Because remember, this was a treaty that largely symbolic, that was forged between two states that had no business being, neither of whom had any business being in the place they were fighting over. So it was just like two empires.
Is it similar? Actually, yes.
I mean, it is. It is. Yeah. And so, yeah, if you want to see a big, if you want to see a giant copper metaphor, it's there in New York.
Well, back home in Hatti, we catch glimpses into domestic matters through the corpus of Hittite laws. Ugh, I love laws.
We're not going to talk about the same laws this time.
Thank God. Some of these we discovered on our bonus episode on horsemanship and horsemanship.
Horsemanship.
Yeah, well, specifically, if you haven't listened to the bonus episode, it's like, don't have relations with a horse.
And then I mean, actually, it's fine if you do.
But then you can't appear before the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, just don't. Don't.
It's fine if you do, but.
Plan ahead. But there are a few things that distinguish the laws from other ancient law codes from Western Asia.
I will say there is a very specific type of guy who exists on LinkedIn who shares things about things like the Code of Nishili, which.
I haven't encountered that guy. Also, not on LinkedIn. I mean,
But I mean, like, that's a it's a type of person who like shares yeah. articles that like aren't.
Cool
articles cool. Cool. but so there are people who are trying to do something with the Hittite laws that needn't be done, where they talk about, because of some of the traits that we're going to talk about in a second,
okay.
and they call it the Code of the Nishili, which makes it sound like it makes it sound like a fringe biblical thing.
It does.
To like give it, maybe just put some mustard on it. But it is, because remember, the Nishili are the people from Nesha, which are the Hittites before they moved to Hattusha. And so there's something going on there that I don't care to interrogate further.
It's just hand wavy. It's very hand wavy.
It's hand wavy, but it's also, what you waving at? And so I don't know what might be going on there, but if you ever see that's not what it's called. They're just called the laws.
The laws. All right. So when you think ancient laws, you might think of something like the Hebrew Bible or the Codex Hammurabi. So remember, the laws of Hammurabi weren't really a legal code consulted by Babylonian attorneys general. Legal lugals. Thank you. But more a demonstration of the king's wisdom, authority, and capacity to maintain order. Look at me, kingin. Kingin so good. In both of those examples, the basis of penalties is retribution. The whole eye for an eye situation. An example of precisely that comes from Codex Hammurabi and deals with an offense against a free man by a member of the same socioeconomic class. So, if an awilum should blind the eye of another awilum, they shall blind his eye. Yikes. The Hittite laws, on the other hand, are based on compensation. Here's the same offense in a Hittite context.
Isn't this cool?
This is very cool.
Thank you. I had fun with this.
Cultural relativism. here it is. If anyone blinds a free person or knocks out his tooth, they used to pay 40 shekels of silver. But now he shall pay 20.
Just 20. It's a footnote, not 20 to the 24th power. Inflation, am I right?
Well, in this economy.
Biden's Hattusha.
How many shekels? He shall pay, instead of 40, 20 shekels of silver, and he shall look to his house for it. Yeah, because before, when they blinded him in one eye, it was 40, but then it's afterwards it's half off.
No, these are reforms. So yeah. These laws existed for a while and they're based on compensation.
Okay.
And so when there were reforms made, they just made it a little less reduced
costly,
them. Yeah. So
I know there's a table here.
No, before the table, there's an observation.
Oh hey. People are different.
So yeah, so it's like are you doing retributive? Are you doing compensatory, like that sort of like what's the point here?
Do you get punished or do you pay?
I'm not saying the Hittites were doing restorative justice, but I'm saying like, are you seeking damages? Are you seeking to be compensated for damages, or are you seeking to inflict the same thing damages. Upon something that they did upon yeah. you?
Okay.
It's a different philosophy, and it's a philosophy that exists at the same time as these other philosophies.
Because that can happen.
It can happen. Yeah. So I just included this table here that I thought maybe you'd be interested in looking at. Yeah. You can read off a few.
How often did these things happen? accident.
And so, but also, you know, we have a lot of stuff in our legal code about murders and so. Well, then again, we do live in America. So a SOGDU. So you see SOGDU, those are two logograms. SOGDU is a head. And so that is a,
Of cattle or something?
No. Oh. So that's a head, but that is a synecdoche. So it's a person. So the idea is like, maybe a slave
from the synecdoche down.
Yep. So that's what a SOGDU is here. Okay. So if you want to just rattle off some different.
Yeah. So in the Hittite Empire, if you did a homicide upon one person,
so that little squiggle, the little simoleon symbol, I don't know what it's called other than that's like the currency symbol in The Sims. That is the specific law, like the line of the law. So these are different circumstances surrounding a homicide.
Okay, so in various circumstances of a homicide, you could owe the family of the person that you killed, I guess.
Yeah.
You could owe them two persons, 100 minas of silver.
Yeah.
If you break someone's arm or leg, you owe them 20 shekels of silver if it's a free man, 10 shekels if it's a slave. If you bite off someone's nose,
pay a mina of silver.
Yeah. Yep.
Don't you bite off an Awilum's nose.
I wasn't.
Because you'll be 40 shekels lighter.
And if you steal a bull, you owe 15 oxen. But if you defile a pond or cistern, it's only 3 shekels of silver, which, frankly, bargain. So.
Yeah, at that rate.
Right? Even with the focus on.
Pee in every pond you can find.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what constitutes defiling. I guess it depends on the size of the pond, huh?
Probably, yeah.
Or just like allowing your herd animals to.
I think it might be like, you know, throwing a dead animal in it or something. Yeah, like something.
Gross.
So, Yeah.
Even with the focus on compensation, there were still capital offenses. And sometimes it's posed as a choice between death penalty and the compensation listed above. Different editions of these laws compiled over the course of Hittite power show adjustments and reforms. In the olden days, if you stole hives, you'd be subject to bee stings. But now you'll just pay compensatory damages.
That is one of them.
Yeah. I didn't think you made that up.
Used to be, if you stole somebody's hive, bee sting. And I'm just like, oh.
How do they make it?
This is what that movie's about. Not the bees.
Oh, we've lost me. Another feature of the laws is a focus on community responsibility. For example.
So you see here, Roman numeral 4. Law is 4. A late version of law 6. That's what just what that means. It's like it's the same one, but you see like a reform happening.
But boy, keeping track of these. Glad that's not my job. If a man is found killed on another person's property, if he is a free man, the property owner shall give his property, house, and 60 shekels of silver to the family. But if the dead person is a woman, the property owner shall give no property but 120 shekels of silver. But if the place where the dead body was found is not private property but uncultivated open country, they shall measure 3 danas in all directions, which I assume is a unit of distance.
Unit of distance, yeah.
And whatever town or village is determined to lie within that radius, he shall take those very inhabitants of the town or village. If there is no town or village, the heir of the deceased shall forfeit his claim.
So what's happening here? I'm electing to think of that gender difference, not as just like rank misogyny, but as sort of life insurance.
Yeah, sure.
I think what's being expressed here is a sense of like, you should know what happens on your property. You should know what's happening in your community. And so if someone gets murdered,
the closest town handles it.
The closest town is the one who, you should know what your business is, kind of thing. And so that sort of having something rest on the community, not an individual, like not necessarily even looking for the murderer, but looking at sort of a systemic approach to how did this murder happen?
Sure.
Which is interesting.
It is interesting. Each town had a council of elders who handled disputes. Some would be heard and adjudicated by provincial magistrates who were proxies for the king. Particularly heinous crimes, including sheep-based crimes, were brought to the king, who might hear them in the absence of the accused. And then still other crimes were the domain of the priest.
Yeah. Far more of the... There is... Yeah, there's one... Like, one of the ones that's a capital offense is, like... this is one where you're like, man, nuance gets lost in the archival record. Where it's, like, if you kill a snake while cursing someone's name... like, because it's you're doing a sorcery.
Right. I'm waiting for the then.
Then death. Oh. Then that's one of the ones that it's potentially a capital offense. She's dreaming.
We're recording right next to.
We're recording in front of a live studio audience.
Well, live but sleeping studio audience. My dog. Hi. Oh, nope. Still asleep.
Far more of the written record available to Hittitologists comes from the realm of religion, and that's where we gain even more insight into the lives of those living in the land of Hatti. And that is also where we're pausing our exploration of the Hittites today. But you can catch the rest of our story over on the premium feed next week-ish, maybe sooner.
We'll see how I get this edited.
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll see. Follow the link in our show notes to subscribe to our back catalog and future releases of bonus content, all for just $5 a month after a 1-week free trial, in which you could pack your little ears full of our content and probably still not finish it. If you're a backer of our former Patreon.
Oh, come on. Say erstwhile. It's fun.
Some people don't know what erstwhile
it's means. It's fun. Erstwhile.
Or former. Patreon. Yeah. You can get all of that content for free forever.
And now you know what erstwhile means, folks.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, we're educating. Edutainment. Even if you don't join up, you can still catch all the show notes from the rest of the episode in our description and find us on our Facebook, on our Instagram, and not so much on Twitter anymore because, well.
Because you haven't logged in.
I don't want to.
It's fine. It's weird just, over there. It's just as bad as it's always been.
Yeah.
You just see it.
Yeah.
Used to be that way, but you didn't see it. But until next time, for you, may all go well. For your wives, your sons, your household, your troops, your chariots, and in your country, may all go very well.